All right. So, I think people are waiting. That was very respectful of them. All right. Come on in. Grab a seat. We're going to get started. All right. So, as I mentioned, we're doing a class or a series right now that I'm calling Selfish Parenting. And the idea behind it is that if we're going to parent our kids well, then we need to think about ourselves and our own character. Because while strategies and parenting techniques and parenting tips and best practices and all the books that we can read are great, character matters more. And so we talked a little bit about this in depth last week. So somebody else helped me out here so I don't have to do all the talking. So why does character matter more? At least I think it matters more. And maybe you can disagree with me. That's fine. Character matters more than parenting techniques and all the rest. Why? I think there's a couple of reasons that we talked about last week. Not everybody wants. Yes, characters of the parents. Yes.
I think as your kids end up doing what you do.
Yeah, so there's the imitation side of it, okay? So our kids see us, we can have all the techniques, but really they're mimicking us. They're learning from us, and both in good and bad, right? So I don't know about you, but I don't do everything exactly the way that my parents did. Anybody else?
That's yeah? Not a bad thing.
And that's not a bad thing, right? So in some ways, what we do is we end up imitating our parents. And some of the way they influence is we actually do things different. We do things opposite. We say, I don't want to do that. I'm going to learn in this way. But the point being is that they're watching us. And some of the most profound influence that we're going to have on our kids is not what we can get out of a book, but just in how we do life, how we lead, how we cook dinner together, how we eat dinner, how we go about our jobs, how we treat one another as spouses, right? All of those things, okay? So that's the first one, right? So there's this imitation side. It was another reason that character matters more. Our character matters more than all the books that we're going to read and techniques that we're going to pick up. Not that we shouldn't do those things. Yes, Molly. Yes. Yeah. So I can read great strategies for getting my kids to be patient, but if I'm not patient, then I'm going to do those wrong, right? They're going to get a bad example, but also I'm not going to even use those techniques well. I'm not going to use those strategies well. I might pick the wrong one for the wrong kid. So when we think about character, understand that I'm going to pull wisdom into character. I'm going to say that to have good character, the way that the scripture describes noble character, it includes wisdom. And so that means that I'm going to have an awareness of myself. It means that I'm going to know my kids. It means that I'm going to understand what's best for them. My kids are all different, so I need to treat them differently to a certain extent in terms of how I'm going to coach them and lead them along. And all of that is grounded more in my character than what I can read out of a book that just sort of is a one-size-fits-all. Does that make sense? Everybody good so far? Okay, so that's kind of where we've come from. Let me say this on the end of this. Just to be clear, it still doesn't mean everything goes well. So just because you are doing your best and you're really searching the scriptures and you are probably a very mature parent, it doesn't mean everything goes perfectly. And just because you have all the techniques and you've all read all the right books, it doesn't mean that it goes perfectly. And so this is where I think it's important that we stop and we remember that while we talk about all these things, really important, it's good, we want to do everything that we can. Man, I spend a lot of time praying for my kids because it's the grace of God. Most of the time my kids are pretty well behaved on the whole. And I think Carrie and I work really hard. She does better than me at like trying to coach them and lead them along. And then we have a day like we had yesterday and I'm like, my kids, I'm a failure as a parent, as a father. They are horrible. They're monsters. Like what happened? And then today will be better. Okay. So you'll, I hope. So, yesterday was ugly, man. It was ugly. We almost only had 3 kids yesterday. I'm just going to drop him off at your house. Protect him from me for a few hours, and I'll come back. Okay. Right, but there's just this reality. So we talk about these things, and you read things in books, and it all sounds really nice and neat and clean, and the reality is it's messy. It's messy. And our kids are messy, and we're messy, and we need the grace of God to simply overflow all of it and cover up all of it. And so we're in prayer, and that's one of the reasons that we do dinner clubs together, is to get to know one another. It's one of the reasons we have this class, is so we can encourage one another and pray for one another, because it's just messy, okay? So I don't want anybody sitting out there going, wow, my kids are a mess, And so therefore, I must lack character, I must not be wise, and I must be reading the wrong books. No, that's not necessarily the case. Okay, that's everybody. Okay, we're doing the best we can, and it's just a struggle. And we just keep struggling on. We do everything that we can, and we trust God. Okay? All right. So what we said last week is in this pursuit of wanting to grow in our character, one of the first steps that we have to take is self-awareness. We've got to be able to look at ourselves and see, who are we? What are the things that I struggle with? What are the things that frustrate me? What are the things that I'm good at? What are the weaknesses that I have? And so self-awareness is really, really important if I'm going to be growing. And this goes for anything, right? You think about this at your job. You think about this as a spouse. You think about this just as a follower of Jesus. If I'm going to grow, I've got to know who I am. I have to know where I am and how I can improve, okay? So if there's a passage that I think is really key to this, it would be Matthew 7. And you can turn there if you want. I'm going to read it, and you're going to know it immediately. So Matthew 7, Jesus says this, "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." Now, usually when we talk about this passage, rightfully so, we talk about hypocrisy, right? He even says, "You hypocrite." So this is the idea that somebody else is doing some little thing. You've got a huge problem, but you're ignoring that and you're dealing with somebody else's relatively minor sin, okay, or issue or whatever it is. I think this is also a picture of self-awareness as parents, that the step-by-step here, notice, it starts with me. I look at myself. I look at the plank in my own eye. That's self-awareness. I have to be able to figure out what is it, what are those areas in which I'm lacking. But notice, he doesn't then ignore the speck in his brother's eye. He says, get it out, get the plank out first and then address it. So even with my kids, I have to be starting with myself, okay? I want to figure out my weaknesses, how I'm growing, but it doesn't mean that I stop there. Well, I don't want to deal with what my kids have going on. No, obviously, we're called as parents to lead our kids. The question is the order in which we do it, and then just recognizing that there may still be a plank in my own eye that I may have to deal with along the way. So every once in a while, here's why I say that. Every once in a while, I'll talk to a parent who says, "My child is really struggling with X, but I can't say anything because I did the same, and that would make me a hypocrite." Or, "My child is struggling with X, but I can't say anything because I deal with the same thing now, and that would make me a hypocrite." Okay, I don't think that's what this passage is saying. I think what it's describing here is that, no, we have to deal with it lovingly, but we have to acknowledge our own problem. We have to acknowledge our own weaknesses. We have to acknowledge where we need to grow. But that doesn't keep us from then turning around to our child and saying, "Okay, we got to help you along as well." That's what it means to be parents. That's what it means to lead and to coach our children. Okay. So what I like about this passage here, though, is telling us there's this need for self-reflection. We don't want to be hypocrites. There's a need for self-reflection. We look at ourselves honestly in the mirror. We get feedback from other people. We discover what the plank is. We own it, but also, we're looking for that speck in our child's eye. We're saying, "Huh, this is an area in which you need to grow." Okay, so it's not just about us; it's moving on as well. So when we talked about self-reflection last week, we talked about, I'm just going to recap this real fast. We were talking about different hidden areas and how we discover those. So you guys remember the Joe Harry window? So who was here last week? About half. Okay, so the Joe Harry window. So this is Joe plus Harry equals Joe Harry is actually how you'll find it online if you're looking for it. And it's this idea here. Known, unknown. Known, can't write, unknown. And this is self. Others, self, and others. Okay, So this first box here, this is known to others and known to self. So this is open. This is what everybody knows, obvious to everybody. What is unknown to me, but is known to others, this is a blind spot. What is known to me, but hidden to others, this is what's hidden. I know it, but you don't. And then over here, this is what's unknown to everybody. So this is what's buried, or it's a super blind spot, however you want to put it. So last week, I'm not going to unpack all this. You can go back and listen to it. But last week, what we're saying is that this side over here, this is what we're trying to get to. Okay. Now, obviously, we know there's things up here that we need to grow in, and everybody knows it. I know it, you know it, we all know it, everybody's clear. Okay. There's things here that I know I need to grow in, areas in which I need to grow, that you don't know about. Okay. Now, for the purpose of what I'm talking about, we're just talking about weaknesses, areas of needed growth. Okay. This can also account for positive things. I'm just not dealing with that right now. Okay. Fair enough? Over here, this side, though, is where if I'm going to grow in self-awareness, this part here has to be shrinking, right? That's the goal. These areas over here get smaller and smaller and smaller. And so I've got blind spots over here that other people can help me with, but then even more significantly, I've got these buried issues here that nobody knows about, I don't even know about. And so these would be, for example, like conditioned behaviors. These would be areas in which like our past has shaped us and we don't even realize it, and other people don't know it because they don't know our past. These could be behaviors that we just do, we don't realize it. So all this right here is also, I would say, often under the surface of what we even find in our blind spots. Okay. So for example, years ago, I was having a conversation. I was leading a team when I was with Campus Crusade, and one of the people kind of pulled me aside, kind of confronted me, and it was this area right here. It was a blind spot. She said, "You realize that when we have a conversation and you don't agree with us, you start getting really animated and loud." And I said, "No, I didn't realize that." She said, "Yeah, you sound really angry." And I said, "Well, I'm really not angry. That's just how I'm responding, right?" And she said, "Well, are you defensive?" I said, "No, I don't even really feel like I'm defensive. I was completely unaware that that's how I was responding." So this was a blind spot. But then over time, I started to realize that actually there was something beneath that down here that had to do with how conflict was handled in my family. And so for me, it started with this person helped reveal a blind spot in terms of how I was simply responding to a conversation, a dialogue. It wasn't even really an argument, per se. But then that pointed me down here to an area that I went, "Oh man, you know what? That's how things were done in my family, and here's why." And it helped me to unpack, and I became a bit more self-aware. And then I was able to be more aware of the blind spot. And over time, I think, I hope, I'm better about that now. Probably not perfect, okay? So that gives you an idea of kind of how that those things work together. Okay, so if we're going to get to this section here, which is probably the deepest underlying heart issues, right? Heart conditions, things that which we're unaware, we need input from other people, okay? So there's things that I'm going to discover about myself. There's things that other people know and I know, but then there's also things that only other people, from up here. This is what other people know and I don't. They're going to be giving me input and giving me feedback. So I want to talk a little bit about feedback, okay? Because we all love getting feedback. Anybody not love getting feedback? Feedback is great, right? Everybody loves getting feedback. So if I was to guess, I would say 100%, roughly, of our difficult conversations involve feedback. I can't think of one off the top of my head that in some way doesn't involve feedback. Every awkward, difficult, uncomfortable conversation that I want to avoid in some way involves feedback, either to me or I have to give it to somebody else. Is that fair? Anybody else have everybody kind of experienced that? There's some feedback that you're giving in some way. Not our favorite thing in the world, but if we're going to grow in self-awareness, then we got to grow in how we give and how we receive feedback. Okay, so there's this really, really smart woman named Sheila Hin. She wrote a book called Thanks for the Feedback. Anybody familiar with the book? Okay, I'm going to familiarize you with it. So she is a believer, and she also happens to be, these are not mutually exclusive. She's a believer. She's also really smart. And she is she's a lecturer for Harvard Law for the last 20 years. She's on the Harvard Negotiation Project. She is part of negotiation and training and teaching people in negotiation. And then she started the Triad Consulting Company. So she's a very, very impressive individual, very intelligent, very smart. So she's written a lot about feedback. And so one of the questions that she asks, which I think is a really good one, is where do you think feedback is most important, in the giving or in the receiving? Okay, some of you, I heard, yeah. Okay, so here's a different way of putting it, because she works for a consulting company, right? Where would you invest your money if you were trying to increase the effectiveness of feedback in your company? Would you pour money into training managers, into giving better feedback, or how they give feedback, or would you pour money into their employees and how they receive feedback? I hear some managers. Anybody say employees? A few employees, managers? Show me hands, managers? Yeah, probably a few more managers. Okay, so typically what happens is managers. Typically what happens is the money goes towards training for the managers. Here's how you give better feedback. And so what Sheila Hin says, we got it all wrong. She said they did that for 10 years, and they said, wow, that is really ineffective and did almost nothing. And so there is a place for that. They still do that. But she said they've dramatically shifted their focus to how people receive feedback. And the reason being, she said, everybody gives feedback poorly. Even if you are brilliant at giving feedback poorly, well, even if you do it amazingly, it is still negated by how somebody receives the feedback. But if somebody receives the feedback, whether you do it wonderfully or poorly, then they can receive the information and they can learn from it. So they had this huge shift, and they moved over to saying, okay, how do you receive feedback? Okay, and that's what I want to talk a little bit about. All right. So none of this is for me. This is all from her book that I think is really brilliant. And I will put the link on the in the email, and you can find it if you want to actually look it up for yourself. So let me start with this question. Why is feedback difficult? Why is it hard to receive feedback? We want to get better, right? Anybody here not want to be a better parent? Anybody here not want to be a better employee or whatever? Like, why is it hard? Steve?
It strikes at our identity and you know, insecurity sets in.
Yeah. Okay, so it's our identity, it's striking our identity, and there's insecurity that plays in that. Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah, Randy.
Well, and getting better is hard work, but just being good is not work. And so if somebody says you're already a good parent, that's really what we're doing. It's not, that's easy. We just wish we were already good.
Yeah. But if we get feedback, we find out that we're not.
Right.
Yeah, that's what's awkward.
Oh, I was a good parent, now I wasn't.
Right. So my kids yesterday were giving me feedback and showing me that I was not near the parent that I thought I was. I was like, wow, okay, that was, you know, humbling. Thank you for that lesson, okay? Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Yeah, thank you, sir. Exactly. All right, anything else? Those are good. So I think that there's a need here that all of us have where we do want to get better. I mean, we come to... We take classes, we go to school, we do everything that we can to do better at work, to be better parents, better spouses, all of those types of things. I think there's a need there. Like, we want to do that, but there's also this need, as both of you alluded to, for acceptance. And the problem with feedback is, right along with what you guys were saying, is that whenever somebody gives us feedback, they're saying, not only are you not as good as you think you are, but also, I wish you were better. So it's like, man, you're a great parent, but you could use an upgrade. You know, I want to tweak you a little bit. And so it immediately like cuts into that acceptance part of it, which makes it very difficult for me then to receive it in a positive way. And so I've got to have, and we're going to talk about this, there's got to be both, right? There has to be that safety and security and identity, approval, and there also, right, that then creates a safe space for the feedback. Okay. Yeah.
I think trust in that relationship, as far as how things are received, is critical.
Yeah.
You know, because from a management standpoint, often taught to build someone up, then break them down, and then build them back up.
Uh-huh.
But if the trust isn't there for that to be received, then it becomes a negative criticism.
Yeah.
So I think the trust factor is something that's often overlooked.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. We're going to get to that in just a second. I want to highlight, I found this really helpful, three different kinds of feedback, just as we think through this. So the first is, we'll just call it acceptance or approval. Number two is coaching. And then the last one is evaluation. So three different kinds of feedback, and we receive all three very differently. Okay, so let's give some examples here. What would be an example of approval, feedback that is approval or accepting? I love you.
Praise, right?
Yeah. Okay. I love you. Man, we're so glad you're here. Such a great guy, right? Approval, acceptance, very positive. Okay. Coaching. What's coaching? What would be coaching feedback? So performance review. You sit down, here's how you're doing. And hopefully I would assume that there's some sort of like steps involved in that, right? So if you get a paper back in college and there's all the little notes on how you can make your paper better, that is coaching, theoretically. And then evaluation. What would be evaluation? On the same paper and in the same performance review. It's your grade. You're failing, F. You know, you're getting an A, whatever that is. Okay. So we have evaluation. It's just, here's how you're doing, period. Two, here's how you can do better. And then acceptance and approval, we love you anyway. Okay. Which of these is more important? Number one?
I think it's coaching.
Okay, all right. So we got some coaching, all right. Maybe some coaching. Anybody else?
Three.
You got to know where you are. Okay. All right. No, you're good.
With my kids.
Yeah.
If I'm just coaching and evaluating, but they don't know that I love them, it kind of goes back to what you were saying last week. Then the coaching and the evaluation mean nothing.
They don't hear any of that. Okay. Yep.
I was just going to say, it may depend on the circumstance.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great point. I think that circumstances may determine a lot of this. Are there any that we don't need?
You're going to say operate, right?
Yes,
Steve. You're going to say we need operate.
Yeah. I mean, don't you think?
I think three is helpful in knowing the severity, whether it be for a relationship or parenting, if you're saying, okay, but here's actually where we are, then we start seeing how severe. Like a lot of times, especially kids, be like, oh, okay, so maybe my parents are mad.
Yeah.
No, like, we actually have it.
You kind of need to know what the score is, right? It's like if you've ever been called in by your boss, and it's like, just so you know, your job is on the line, and you had no idea. Like, and they're like, well, we've been coaching you for months. Yeah, but you never told me what the score was, right, until that moment. And so I think there's this need for keeping the score along the way. Let me be real clear. Here's where you are. This is not acceptable, or this is very acceptable. You're doing great. And then that gives a context for the coaching. Because if I don't know what the evaluation is, if I don't know what the score is, and you're just coaching me, I'm just like, well, that's nice. You know, I mean, maybe they're a go-getter. Maybe your kid is like my firstborn who's going to be like, yes, coach me, make me better. Or you're like my secondborn who's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I see butterflies, right? I mean, so I've got to, right, there's a need for evaluation, but there's definitely a need for coaching. There's definitely a need where we're going to tell them, okay, now, if this is where you are, here's how you get better. And then always this need for acceptance. So we need all three. What I think is unhelpful is when we give evaluation without coaching or without acceptance. That's probably the one that I would really avoid. I think that there's fewer things that are worse than sitting down with somebody and telling them, well, you're really failing, good luck. And I think our kids feel that too. And I'll just tell you, like, this is something I feel I don't do well enough. I think a lot of times I will stop my child. They know what they're not supposed to be doing. And I'll say, no, that's not right. You know it's not right. But that may be as far as it gets. And there's this need for this next step of saying, how can you do this better next time? And trying to help them unpack even how they respond in the circumstance or a different way of thinking about it. Like, I think there's some added steps there that, at least for me as a parent, it's really easy to overlook, because it's like, well, you should know better. And if you don't do it right, you're going to go to your room for a timeout. Okay, but how am I helping them actually like grow through that? So that's the one that when I think about as a parent, I think I do this one pretty well. I think I do this one pretty well. I think for a lot of us, this is the hard one. Because, yeah.
Sorry.
No.
Is it coaching also is so much about asking questions that they can come up with the answer?
Yeah. That's a great point.
It's instead of telling you, like, I'm your manager, this is what you do. It's,
right.
Okay, so we have this area that's an area of opportunity for growth. So What do you think could be a next step?
Yeah.
And then you shut up. And you know the answer, but you don't say it. And you let them come up with it. And you ask lots of questions until they come up with it.
So the Socratic method.
Build confidence into be their idea so it sticks long term.
Yeah, ask questions. Yeah, Doug.
So part of that empowerment or involving them in my coaching, that's huge. And the evaluation for that matter.
Yeah.
That's definitely the way the business world treats it.
Yeah.
And more and more so all the time.
Right.
The thing from a parenting standpoint, I think what you find a lot of times is I won't say it's good cop, bad cop, but I think the coaching, that maybe one parent has a strength coaching or kind of building someone up or working through it, and there are different ways of tackling all three in combination.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, so.
And I was thinking, like, if you think of all of these in terms of God's character, in a sense that acceptance and approval is kind of like God's mercy in a sense, you know, whereas the evaluation, it's like his righteousness. It's like saying, this is who God is, this is who we are in reference to who he is. And then I feel like coaching is essentially like all of scripture telling us this
is how you right.
So I feel like this model really fits with God's whole character.
Absolutely.
It's not just the mercy, it's not just the justice, but it's God coming with both of those and saying, now this is what you should do.
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah.
And I think as a parent, one of the struggles to me with coaching is lack of time.
Lack of time.
We've got things to do. We've got places to go. Get your shoes on. Please get your shoes on.
I've never had that conversation.
And mine are 8 and 10, so like they know how to get their shoes on.
Right.
But I think that's where I really struggle with the coaching, is knowing how to manage my time and knowing how to, the little boys and children don't know how to manage time.
Yeah.
So setting them up for success.
I love that. Yeah.
Which is, you know, maybe instead of, you know, we've got 60 seconds to get out the door, get your shoes on, have them put their shoes on before breakfast. Maybe that helps. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I know that the struggle I have with the coaching is, we've got stuff to do, we've got places to go, and we don't have a lot of time to do that.
Yeah.
And that's not.
Yeah. Did you guys hear that? So I know in the back it can be hard to hear, but just talking about, like, with a lot of coaching, it requires time. And on the behavioral side of it, like you're referring to with the shoes, some of that is just planning on our part to set our kids up for success. But there is this need for, if we're gonna coach them, it takes time. Like, you have to stop, you have to create space, and that can be difficult. Yeah, Doug.
One more thing and I'll shut
Thank goodness.
I want to know that there's a similarity to Johari Wendo, and if you're familiar with Stephen Covey and the Seven Habits.
Yeah.
Time management.
Yep.
This is, I think, relevant with regard to importance.
Yes.
It's the same window.
Right. Urgent and urgency. Yeah.
So how you manage time and how you allow your children to dictate your time based on urgency and importance. I think there's some parallels there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's great. Okay. All right. Next thing real quick. We're almost. So those are the different kinds of feedback. We've talked a lot about sort of how those relationships and how they work. This part is why I think we reject feedback. So let me ask you to start with. So think back to a time when somebody offered you feedback and you didn't take it. And then see if you can tell me why. Yeah. Sorry.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, fantastic.
In their eye.
Yeah, so relationship. I'll do a relationship. You could see the plank in their eye. It was huge. And you're like, I don't care. I don't think there's a speck of dust. I think you're seeing that plank. Yeah, okay. That's good. That's good.
Your own pride.
Pride, yep. Relationship. So I'm gonna hold off on that one for just a minute. You're too smart for me, your head. Okay. What else?
There's not enough of that, number one, that acceptance, or that those kind of comments that are praised, they only come in conjunction with critique.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So again, it has to do with this relationship with the person who's sharing it. Either you're seeing the plank in their eye. Two, you don't trust them. There's some lack of relationship there that allows you to take the feedback seriously. Let me give you a couple of others. I think another one is just the content itself, the truth of it. So this is where somebody offers you feedback and you go, I've got all this other data that says that's not true. And so we dismiss that because we have this block of data. So the one person comes and criticizes you, but you've got 80 people over here who've all said you did it perfectly, and so you go, well, I'm not going to listen to you anymore because all these people said I'm great. Okay, so this can be true or false. I'm just saying that's one of them. Okay, truth. And then the last one I would say, and this goes back to kind of what we were saying earlier, and that is identity. So with the truth, it has to do with the content of what's being shared, but this one, identity, has to do with how closely it touches me, right? Like, is this speaking to some place that is dear to me, that identifies me, that is my value or my worth? And the closer it gets to that, the harder it is and the quicker it is for me to dismiss feedback. Yeah, James.
And we can do that either way. So, like, we believe something negative about ourselves. Mm-hmm. Someone's trying to tell us something positive, and we dismiss it.
We dismiss that. That's right. Yeah, these are really neutral. It's not all negative. Because the reality is we do need to dismiss some feedback. And so there's some that feedback that, no, I'm sorry, your relationship does not give you the right to speak to me on this issue, and I don't trust you in that. And there is content that someone's going to offer back to me that I've got a lot of other content that's telling me that's not true. And there are times when, well, no, that is my identity, and I'm not going to, I can't accept that. And that's okay. Right. So these are the filters that we're using. The trick is we don't want to be too quick to assume these. So these are the triggers that when we're talking to our kids that could prevent them from listening to us. Think of it that way. So if I'm speaking to one of my kids and my content is embellished, I'm overstating to make a point, I get carried away emotionally and I'm saying big dramatic things or whatever, then that could trigger this for them and they go, well, Dad's just off on one of his things, and they dismiss it. With identity, this has to do with knowing our kids well enough to know, I think, being sensitive to like where they're finding their worth and their value. And I think this is really, really significant for all of us. And then obviously we've talked a lot about our relationship with our kids. Yeah, any other thoughts on that?
I like so with regard to the truth,
yeah,
and the hyperbole of it all,
yeah.
When someone is giving you feedback or you're receiving feedback,
yeah,
and there's exaggeration in that, it can take the trust out of the relationship.
Yeah.
Because when someone says you always do this,
that's right.
I mean, that exaggeration of it, that takes away from the truth.
Yeah, so true.
And it makes the communication of the criticism just not doable.
Yeah. As soon as you start throwing out those all or nothing comments, and yeah.
You take the gray out of it and it's all black and white.
Yeah.
So that's problematic.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
I think there's a lot saying always or never, and it discourages the person from like all the times that you didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You really didn't notice, so.
Yeah, well then I'll live up to your expectation now.
Well, it changes from a conversation to an argument.
Yeah. Yeah. Very true. Yeah, Molly.
would you factor time into that too, where you might say,
yeah, I think that's good.
That's, you're right, but I really can't focus on that right now. I cannot address that, or, you know, it's feedback on maybe a document or something you created, and you're like, mm-hmm. that's good information, but the time it'll take to do that is probably not worth that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and trying to factor in time and mental, you know, space too.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of it maybe goes back to what we talked about last week with the various, remember we put together kind of a rough list of different areas that create blind spots for us. I think there's some overlap here where the pressures in my life keep me from receiving feedback because I just don't have the margin for even listening to it. The margin in my life, the stresses in my life, the temptations in my life, right? All of these things play a part in, I simply can't hear that and I dismiss it out of hand. And I think that's what we're trying to, if I could kind of sum up, I think when we think about receiving feedback, what we're trying to get to is recognizing that we've got to slow down and we have to consider whether there's truth in it. So these can be true, right? And maybe we do need to dismiss it, but oftentimes there's something there that we should probably be listening to and we should be growing from. I'll share this with you just because it's kind of funny to me. But this was really helpful. I had somebody who last time I preached came and he explained to me that my preaching was really superficial and shallow, and I mean, in those words, and I was like, okay, well, this is
exactly.
You didn't say it exactly that way, it's close. And I was like, okay, so here's the thing with feedback though. I think oftentimes with feedback, there's such a quick, right, in that moment I'm going, okay, I've got this content arguing against that. I've got a relationship. I don't really know the guy that well. And then I've got identity because, my gosh, this is what I do for a living, okay? So I have all these reasons to dismiss it, okay? But the thing is, I think when you can stop, and if there's a takeaway for this morning, I'd say if you can stop and one, seek to understand, a lot of times feedback is offered and it's very general and you don't know what it means, okay? So somebody says, man, that was a great job. Well, the reason you think it's a great job and the reason they think it's a great job is not always the same thing. And so you may miss an opportunity to understand and to, you know, the next time you do what you think is exactly the same and they're like, that's terrible. Well, you didn't understand. So for example, in this case, I had the opportunity to sit down with him and said, okay, so help me out here. And I began to ask questions. And so what I learned was that for him, his definition of for something to be deep meant that we were going to unpack the Greek and we were going to dig deep, deep into the text. And I said, man, that's totally fair. The way I'm treating this, I said, one, I don't only have so much time in a sermon. And two, what I'm trying to do is get out like the meaning of it. And I want to go really deep into how it applies to our lives and how it affects my heart. I said, so that was my criteria and your criteria. They just didn't line up. And so there was an understanding there that was really helpful. And once I understood where he was coming from, I could say, yeah, by that standard, you're right. It was probably superficial, okay? But that wasn't what I was going for. And then he understood where I was coming from. So I think stopping and slowing down and trying to understand, asking questions, understand what the feedback is really helpful, because I think it can be very general or just vague, you know? It's like, you know, it was fantastic, or it was great, or it was terrible. And we assume when someone says it was terrible, like we immediately jump to our worst fears about what they could mean, okay? And then the other thing I would say is this. We need to look for the 1% of truth that's contained in it. You know, in this case, you know, we had this conversation and I was able to say, well, this is where I was coming from. He said, this is where I was coming from. Great, we understand. You know what was helpful for me? It was still a really good reminder for me that whenever I am teaching or preaching, I do want to dig deep into the text, even if I'm not going to be sharing all of that content. I do want to make sure that I'm digging deep and getting everything out of it that I can before I present it. And so it was still a good reminder for me, and it was still encouraging for me, and I thought, man, thanks for that reminder. I want to be better. Thanks for, you know, even bringing this up. And so I think anytime we can receive feedback and look for even the 1% of truth, then that's an opportunity for us to grow and to get better. Yeah, September.
Yeah, I'm thinking about back when you were talking about the plank in our own eye. I don't know if it's like this with y'all, but the kids that are most like me are the ones who get on my nerves the most.
Of course, yeah.
Right? And the qualities in others that you don't like about yourself annoy you
mm-hmm.
about that person.
Yeah.
And so it is the Lord revealing the plank in your eye.
Mm-hmm. Through your children.
Is doing that thing that you're like, whoa, like, and you find yourself, and so it's
almost a red flag for us and with our spouse. Like, this one thing I'm really noticing that you're not doing very well.
The thing that I'm not doing very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's making me think of that.
Yeah.
And bringing it full circle.
Yeah, thank you for wrapping this all up for me. That's really good. No, it's good. Thank you. Asako.
And one more thing about, one of the things that is frustrating as parents when you are trying to give a good, you know, a feedback to either correct the child or have the child, you know, you're doing it for their benefit.
Yeah.
You're giving a feedback, but you don't get the results immediately on that day.
Yeah.
You get the results that you want, right? And it's not going to happen the next day either. But then, from my experience, this summer, I mean, my kids are far from exemplary in my house. But then they did a 6-week, or my oldest one, did a 6-week homestay in a Japanese family. Mm. And I was scared because I ruined the relationship between that host family and me. Because, you know, having one person in your house
Yeah.
eventually gets old. But he actually got a lot of praises. He was being very helpful in the house. It was to the point that I thought, this is not the same child. He was helpful to a positive, you know, like he was trying to, you know, help the flow of the families even more than when he wasn't there.
Uh-huh.
You know? And so I felt like, okay, we don't get to see, as parents, we don't get to see the results.
Yeah.
Actually, when Theo's at home, we're always battling. Like, he always comes and argues, and he's always kind of ugly. But in a way, just like you said, you dig deep and you can only deliver 1%. But the child does take the 1% and applies it outside of the house.
Mm.
And I guess it also works.
Yeah. That's so encouraging. Thank you for that.
Right.
You know, it's better than the reverse.
Absolutely.
Really
happy,
I'd rather be at home.
Yeah.
Yes.
So parents are, you have to kind of accept that we are the trash bags.
I think I love your description, because I think there's a sense in which when you're at home, your kids are like, it's where they're learning and they're growing and they're testing and they're trying and they're, you know, and it's like, I feel like my kids try out attitudes with me that they would never try with teachers, thankfully, you know. And they try different, I mean, one of my kids will be like, you know, he'll totally talk back to me in a certain way. And I don't even know if he means to be disrespectful necessarily, but it's almost like, can I get away with this? It's like, no. All right. Now he knows, you know. And so you've got that happens within the home. And the idea is that, yeah, you spend a lot of investment in our kids. And then hopefully, Lord willing, thank you for, you know, encouraging us that it's possible. Then they'll leave. And hopefully all of those lessons will have started to actually shape them. So.
And having hosted the Banner Toys in our house.
Yeah, we love them. Yeah, they're great. Yes, we've kept them several times. No, that's good. That's good. All right, well, we're done for today. You know, again, we're in this context, we're just talking about growing in our own self-awareness of where we are. And so I just want to encourage you, like, as we think about feedback, I think one of the things that Sheila Heen suggests, and I think it's really helpful, is to go to your spouse, go to somebody that you trust, somebody you know well, and you can even try this with your kids if you're feeling really bold, and ask two things. One is, what is something that you really appreciate about how I parent, or about how you, whatever that is, and then that's going to hit that acceptance thing that we need, that need. And then secondly, say, what's one area that I could do better? One area, because you know they've got a list, right? You know, I mean, they've got a list. So don't ask them, is there anything? Ask them, what's the one thing that that you could see? And I think we'd all do well for that. I think we want to grow. We want to be better. And I know I want to be, and I need to be a better parent and a better husband. So I hope we can do that.